welcome to The Drone Frontier, a podcast series commissioned by UK Aid and undertaken by the Frontier Technologies Hub. I am your host, Sarah Pennell, Policy Advisor in FCDO's Technology and Innovation Unit and Drones for Development Lead at the FCDO. In this five-part series, we're going to delve deeper into what the future of drones or unmanned aerial vehicles can look like, how they can be used for positive impact, what we need to do to include them in existing systems, and how we can get the global rules on drone technology right. During the series, we'll hear from some of those pilots, as well as some of the most cutting-edge uses and users of drone technology around the world. We hope this podcast will better inform you about what's out there, as well as what's needed to successfully harness this growing technology. In this final episode of the series, we're moving on to discuss manufacturing. Often a flashy and esoteric industry, our next guests have spoken about how drone manufacturing can be encouraged in developing countries, particularly in Africa, in order to foster and develop local ecosystems. I'm joined now by Tendai Pasipanyoja, a systems change expert with 17 years of experience in identifying, developing, supporting, and co-creating innovative solutions to tackle development challenges, most recently in the African drone sector. I'm also joined by Hans-Peter Tam, who has 18 years experience manufacturing and operating drones for civil use cases. He has completed a range of successful operations in different countries in Africa, Asia, and Europe. His former company, Aerolution, now German Drones, developed one of the first vertical takeoff and landing drones in the world, the Songbird. Welcome both, it's great to have you here. So let's start with those that aren't familiar with the work. Can you give a brief introduction to the Drones Doing Good Alliance?
Yes, so the Drones Doing Good Alliance is a spin-off initiative from the work Endeavour and Geotechnic have been doing on systems change work in the drone sector. So we're basically focused on unlocking the full potential of drones and complementary technologies in order to achieve the SDGs. And we also have a strong focus on localizing drone technologies in systemic and future-fit ways.
Wonderful, and we're really looking forward to hearing a lot more about that. So should we start with hearing a bit about what you mean by localization of the technology and why that's important?
Yes. So, you know, too often you have life-changing technologies, whether it's water pumps or ventilators or whatever it is, you have this technology being designed and made abroad for people living in vastly different contexts. And so typically they're then transferred to say, African countries, and they start to lose their impact. And that's because they may not be appropriately adapted. They might not be easy to repair and maintain locally. They may not be affordable on a commercial basis, or they may be funded in one-off development projects that don't have a plan for sustainability integrated. So when you look around, just an example, you know, last year, 10 African countries had no ventilators and they lacked oxygen to run the machines they did have, or they had machines that had fallen into disrepair. So you start to see why it's so critical to have technology localized. And, you know, the pattern's starting to repeat itself if you look at the drone sector. And that's what we really see an opportunity. If we want to unlock the full potential of this technology, we're going to have to localize it further and increase local competition, increase partnerships with foreign actors and local actors. Because at the moment, there's a lot that's skewed in favor of foreign companies, and local actors face an uphill battle.
Fantastic. Thanks, Tendai. This is something we've been hearing quite a lot throughout the podcast of what the drone landscape looks like and who the major drone suppliers are and the a lot of international companies and some of the challenges that are being faced for local startups. So you had a project with some UK aid funding to look at some of this. It would be great to hear a bit more about that.
Yes. So we did a project. It was a collaboration between UK Aid. We had Airbus on board. We had the pharmaceutical company Merck also on board. We collaborated with Lifebank, a startup based in Nigeria, but operating in several countries in Africa. and Geotechnic, so led by Hans Peter and myself, we're kind of bringing these actors together to find how we can take the first step, which is to localize the technology. So instead of supporting a proof of concept where a foreign company does operations, we wanted to see what would it take to get a local actor who's already embedded, already has more affordable solutions like bikes and boats, and what would it take for them to then integrate drone technology so that you have affordability, but for those cases where you can't get there with any other cheaper modality, you can integrate drones. So it was a two-year project. It was rich in learning, which means we had a lot of pain and suffering through the process. And those lessons really were what helped us to really understand how the system works. So one of the three key lessons we got out of it was that, you know, the technology is too expensive. We did an exhaustive scan of all the drones out there, tested them at the Airbus testing field in Munching. So after this very comprehensive reviews of all the VTOLs out there, we realized that the best VTOLs were still too expensive. We went ahead and purchased the best we could find at the time and conducted a proof of concept and hit into regulation barriers. And regulations are particularly challenging, sometimes more challenging for local actors than foreign actors. And we also learned a lot about how the technology just isn't adapted. So the drone we ended up using, we weren't able to fly it in one of the regions because it was just never tested in such hot areas and would have then fallen out of warranty. So, you know, that's just one way, but there's so many ways that this technology just wasn't appropriate for what we're trying to do. It was a bit too flashy. It wasn't simple enough. It wasn't robust enough. And so from that, we really realized that if we want to help local actors to be able to use drone technology, we have to drive the price down. And it has to be made and repaired locally, because a lot of the options at the moment require, if you're flying on a regular basis, maintenance and repairs every 2 weeks. And, you know, you can't fly in engineers from Germany or anywhere else every 2 weeks or ship a drone out. So there's just no business case at the moment, given the cost of the technology.
So Tindak, you outlined some of the barriers and some of the findings from that project around the tech being expensive and regulation and not having the technology that's quite right for the uses that you were seeing that needed. It would be great to talk a bit more about some of those barriers and also what you think governments and donors could do about it.
So I think one of the main things that governments and donors can do is to help even the playing field. So if you're an aerospace company in Australia or in the UK or Germany or wherever the States, you have so many resources to support you. You have governments who are willing to invest, you know, $1 million grants in you. You have foundations from your home countries that put in a lot of support and funding. And you also have educational institutes and support networks that foster a very rich exchange on these topics. And local actors don't always have that same advantage. So I think anything that donors can do to help, you know, even this playing field, providing more funding, especially soft funding to local actors so that they can, you know, build the quality of the technology, supporting initiatives that build local capacities, like UNICEF has this Africa Digital Data Academy, or We Robotics is doing a lot of interesting work on localizing the technology. So I think there's a lot to be done around supporting that. And also when it comes to procurement, typically the most qualified companies are foreign companies, but including some sort of a component for partnerships with local actors, I think is really important, so that at every point local actors are gaining experience so that they can eventually compete, because the local solution typically is in the long run the best solution, because, you know, they live there, they stay there, they understand the entire system. And so finding ways to do that. And of course, because we take such a strong systemic perspective, you know, ultimately the ideal thing is for donors to look at how they can actually reconfigure the system. We don't really need another POC delivering blood in a new country, but we do really need to find ways to change the way the system works. And of course, we have some interesting projects that do this in the pipeline, which we can talk about at a later point.
Tendai, thank you. That's fascinating. And you were talking about the various stakeholders that need to come together to make the drone operations work. It would be really great if you could explain a bit about who the different stakeholders are and what some of their needs are and how everything fits together in how you see a drone, a well-functioning drone operation working.
Yes, sure. So for starters, you have the local manufacturers. And these are companies, you have quite a few now on the continent. You have Swift Labs in Kenya, you have Micromake in Malawi, and many others across the continent who are developing drones and starting to get to a point where they can have commercially viable solutions on the local market. Their key need is really support in not reinventing the wheel. So a lot of the times, the models that they're using, and this might be a point where Hans-Peter could come in, saying, you know, as a manufacturer, where he sees the gaps for local manufacturers. So some of the gaps that they face is that a lot of the models are not really are borrowed from the military sector, or they've borrowed from the academic sector, and they're not really, they're sort of trying to reinvent the wheel. And instead, if they would have access to more information, they could, instead of reinventing the wheel, really get the basics covered and instead spend all of that ingenuity and innovation on, you know, really taking the technology to the next level and making it much more adapted to the local context. Hans-Peter, do you want to say something about local manufacturers before I move on to operators?
Yes, I think so. You know, I had been at the African Drone Forum in, I think, 2020, I think. And I was very impressed with about the enthusiasm some of the people have. You know, in the Western world or in the industrial companies, you have a lot of universities with aerospace. You have a lot of model airplane clubs. You have a lot of knowledge. You have libraries. You have every kind of manufacturer around the door when you need help. And in some of the countries in Africa, it's very different. You know, there is not this infrastructure, and even small things can be a really big problem because of knowledge or the supply and something like that. And this really gave me a big kick. And I thought, hey, we need, and I saw that they waste a lot of time by trying to rebuild machines which are too expensive, too complex. But these are the ones, the classical you find in the internet, or you when you go do a master, bachelor or master in aerospace engineering, you are in these combustion engines, fixed wing or something like that. And so I decided to get my engineers. I have a very good partner. He's a really gifted designer of airplanes. Africa, they made some leapfrog, you know, with a telephone company, with a mobile phone. Now everyone has now very good connections. And I really would like to help that they have a production technique which is very easy to make, which is they can earn money from the very beginning from, which can be, which doesn't need much complex supply chain or something.
Thanks, Hans-Peter. Yeah, you do paint a brilliant picture of how this, what the manufacturing needs are, and some really exciting ideas for how it could be. And Tendai, you were also going to talk a bit about some of the operators. Well.
Yeah. So some of the other stakeholders are, of course, local operators. And there's a lot of people, local actors, who are now either experienced using copters, so they at least have an understanding of some of the procedures with drones, even though it's just with the copters. Or there are some local actors who are doing operations with long-range drones. And so the main challenge for local operators is that they would love to have long-range drones. They have the use cases and the need for them, but the problem is the technology is just too expensive. The total cost of operation is way too high, and so they can't make a business case. And what you typically find is local operators operate on a commercial basis, whereas foreign companies tend to have a bit of a hybrid business case at the moment. And so because they don't have access to as much soft funding, they tend to be focused on, you know, on very few use cases, or they just can't integrate the long-range drone. So they're looking for simple solutions that can be repaired and maintained locally and that are cost-effective. And then when you look at the other local operators, so some of them are startups who are trying to integrate drone solutions as a service. you have different governments, so maybe ministries of health or other ministries who would like to use drones, procure services from drone operators. And for them, you know, while they would like, some of them even have local requirements, they can't fulfill those local requirements because the local solutions are not up to the same level as the foreign competitors in some cases. So there's a need there as well. And then very importantly is the civil aviation authorities in a country, because they can really make or break progress in a sector. And in some cases, there's a desire for increased capacity building. But I think in another need is really for them to be able to not just cut and paste solutions from foreign countries. There's a reason why Africa is a leader in drone operations. It's because the regulations are more permissive. So some countries, to be safe, are just copying and pasting what foreign governments have done, and they're starting to chokehold the progress in the sector. So I think there's a real need and a real interest from CAAs to understand what their options are and how they can continue to allow the sector to thrive, but still maintain a very high degree of safety and operations. And that's something we actually looked at a lot in a joint initiative we did called Wakanda Beyond, which is looking at how do you use technology to make Africa the safest place to fly drones easily. So technology can go a long way, but there's much more to it than just obviously the technology.
Great, thanks, Tina. And that probably leads us on to talking a little bit more about systems change. You're talking about there being a lot more obviously than just the technology. So it'd be great to hear a bit more about what you mean by a systems change approach and the value of taking that approach.
Yeah, so taking a systems change approach means that before you take action, you take time to understand how a system works. So systems aren't broken, they just operate the way they're designed to. And so if you take the time to understand what are the incentives, the driving forces, the interconnections, and start to look for patterns within the system, you start to notice things like bright spots, which are like, you know, things that you can be hopeful about, things you can build on. You see also points that create ripple effects. So where one thing, if it's affected, will kind of touch on many different other elements. And you also find frozen areas that are things that are just fixed. You cannot change them, and it would be impossible to really change that element of the system. So when we look at the drone sector, for example, the solution becomes a lot clearer as far as like, where do we go next when you understand the system? So you have bright spots, for example, this new wave of tech-savvy entrepreneurs and manufacturers on the continent. You have countries that have welcoming regulation, that have drone corridors and spaces for people to start flying drones beyond visual line of sight. You also have substantial ripple effects. So for example, if the price of the technology dropped significantly, that would have all kinds of ripple effects in the system. And then, of course, you have frozen areas where maybe there's challenges with certain countries that are simply close to drone operations. You know, that's probably going to be a frozen area where you don't start in that country. And so as we start to understand the way the system works and building on all of these things, you start to understand, you know, well, if we just did this thing, everything else changes. And so you start to have not only sustainable impact, but really self-sustaining impact, which is, you know, why I'm so excited about taking systemic approaches into the work we're doing. Yeah, so you move away sort of from band-aid solutions or trying to fight the system, but instead you reconfigure the system so that it inherently produces the outcomes you're looking for.
Can I want to add something. For instance, the whole airspace industry, drone sector, it was very, very slow, very regulated, not much innovation. And then with the drone, suddenly completely new player came up. Why? Because they don't need much capital. You know, even the copters you can build for a couple of $100s. And therefore, suddenly a lot of new designs came, new propeller, new types. In the last, it started slowly in the 2005, from 2005 very slowly. And from 2010 to 2015, there was really exploding because we're a completely new player. It was, you know, we could break with all the, when you're with the, all your experience, when you're in a university, you learn aerospace, you know, airplane has to be two wings, la la la. But with these drones, suddenly completely new people like me, I'm a geographer, you know, I don't know much about airplanes at the beginning. but I wanted to make my photos when I wanted to get the information I want to. And this is really a very, it's a completely different change when you enable the people which need and want to do something, they can develop freely without the restraints of tradition and something. And this is a very good, at the beginning, of course, as soon as you really manufacture, it's very important that you build, that you have the safety regulations that you have. But this is as well, we want to step in, that we enhance the ability for people with new ideas to start something, but we can give them with the experience how to make it for industrial standard and that it works. And especially the drone sector, and I may come to the end for this part, is you don't need much capital when you want to produce, set up a car industry in Africa. You need billions of dollars. But with the drones, even with this little money we have a completely new system. The drones we have now at the moment, it's by far the best you can get in the world market, and you can cut it out in a little shed out of foam, and it would be a competitive machine. And this is really, and then you can enable so much things. You know, where there are people from Angola said, hey, we had a lot of problems with mines. Can you design other wings that we can fly a little slower, that we have the devices for detecting mines can be done and things like that. And because it's cheap, it's fast, and it is forgiving. You know, when a foam machine crashed and it costs just a couple of $100, you are much more likely to train something new. When you make a very nice mold from KFK, something like that, then a crash costs you $20,000, $50,000 and bar. And this is exactly in the open software. It was the same with Ubuntu or something. And now we want to go with this in the hardware sector.
Thanks, Hans-Peter and Tendai. I could talk to you all day about this because it's brilliant. You take such potentially complex ideas around the system and you explain very clearly where the entry points are and what the possibilities are, and it's clear hearing from you both that there is a lot of exciting opportunities and drones are much more accessible than we might think, but it's about finding out where in the system and tackling some of those challenges and providing some solutions and technological solutions that meet those needs.
The last word maybe, you know, when I started, I was, everyone laughed at me. You know, I said I want to have the flying machines. I can do what I want at this time. I want very simple, very cheap, very good. And I went to the universities, all of them said, oh, no, vertical takeoff and landing. No, it's not possible. The Osprey was a failure, something like that. You understand? And I think the very big changes, they come from other sides. You know, it's not from the Airbus will never, ever change the commercial drone stuff, because from their structure, it's much expensive. They are very good in building solid machines, long, but the innovative, the creativity that you do things, it's not there. And it was the same with nearly every big technology. It came somewhere from a grassroots level. And I really think, like so much now, that I want to enable the people which are enthusiastic and know, and I want to give them cost-efficient, cheap machines that they can do their things, that they don't have to be streamlined and have in big corporates, la, la, la. And the very best thing as well is you can earn money very fast with it. And I think this I like most. You know, as soon as they can build the first machine after 2 months or 3 months, they can sell it. They make money. And money is very powerful, convince. You know, so they can get engineers, they can get software people, they can. And it's not foreign money we must put in. It's just the money for the education, and then they can do it. And I even dream of about re-importing African-built drones to Germany.
No, I think, the future can be very bright. We can, you know, completely rebrand what we think of as Afrotech. That doesn't really mean anything to anyone today. But I think with, you know, manufactured in Africa, we could really rebrand what that is and create jobs and create companies with real growth potential that are solving important challenges related to the SDGs. So, you know, that's really exciting. I think that's what really motivates us, kind of the multiple layers of wins, and just having that be something that, you know, after initial push can become self-sustaining. So we don't have to force things all the time, keep pouring in money, but with very smart investments, we can completely change the way things work in this space. And that's incredibly exciting.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you would like to find out more about the work of our guests and any of the resources they've mentioned, please check out the links in the description. Also, you can leave us a rating and a review. It really helps others find our show. This series is based on an internal report completed by the Frontier Technologies Hub for the FCDO, which reviews the 7 pilot projects that have tested drones as part of the Frontier Technologies live streaming program. Check out the link in the description to read the full report. This podcast has been funded by the FCDO, and I would like to thank all of our guests, as well as our collaborators at the Frontier Technologies Hub, for helping to produce this podcast. You've been listening to The Drone Frontier. Thank you.